Welcome to the Superconscious Success Podcast, where Jen and her Superconscious Success Family co-hosts bring you valuable content each and every week on topics relating to manifestation, spirituality, and most of all, using your superconscious to manifest success in all areas of your life. Now on to today's episode.
Hey there, Superconscious Success Fam. Welcome back to another chapter reading where we are going to continue on with Napoleon Hill's Grow Rich with Peace of Mind. Not one of his most known books, but it is absolutely fantastic, as I've said in the other chapters. Coming up shortly, I will actually be doing Think and Grow Rich because that is obviously one of his most popular ones. But I want to get some of these out there that people haven't heard of before or haven't listened to before I start bringing those in. I have done A New Earth and The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. Make sure you check that out as well. Okay, so this chapter is actually called The Blessed Art of Sharing Your Riches. Wealth that is shared creates more wealth, and you can share many forms of wealth besides money. Today's millionaires themselves point out that anyone can become a millionaire because today's wealth is so widespread and gives rise to so many opportunities. When you share in your own home, you create a basic harmony which adds to your success and peace of mind in everything you do. Start now to share what you have, and when you have plenty of money, you will share your money the more wisely and with greater benefit. You are going to make money. If you do not allow negative points of view to trip you up, you will march straight forward on the road to riches. Yes, you are going to make money in solid sums. Money that comes to you through your own worthy efforts, money you spend for your own worthy desires, and money you spend in helping others. Will you build your character while you build your fortune? This, as by now you know, is not exactly another matter. There is a strong connection between the power to make money and the power to know your own mind and fulfill your own self as a fully realized person. Again, we shall examine a technique that goes with being rich and having invincible peace of mind. So far as sharing money is concerned, you may see this technique as belonging to your future. So far as sharing other forms of wealth is concerned, this technique is yours right now. Use it and make it part of you. Life proceeds according to a great law of compensation. The more you give of what you have, the more comes back to you, and it comes back greatly multiplied. He gave away 90% of his working hours. One of my distinguished students, Edward Choate of the New England Life Insurance Company of Los Angeles, decided to help his government sell war bonds during World War II. He devoted 80% of his time to this effort, for which he received no direct compensation. In addition, he gave 10% of his time to counselling and training other life insurance men, his direct competitors. For this, he neither asked nor received compensation. He used the remaining 10% of his time to sell life insurance on his own account. One might think that a man who gave away 90% of his working hours would ruin his business. Let us see. A life insurance man is considered to do pretty well if he writes $1 million worth of insurance in a year. During the first 3 months of one war year, Edward Choate wrote more than $1.5 million worth. Most of this was written in his own office on the lives of men who sought him out and asked him to accept their applications. They were men who remembered him in connection with the services he rendered while he was giving away 90% of his time. In giving of his time, Mr. Choate never hinted that he wanted anything in return. Yet such is the law of compensation that a return is inevitable. You may wish to look at it this way. Every time you share your blessings with another, you become his creditor. Eventually, the debt is paid. Somehow, debts have to be paid. They gave away a philosophy and it returned manyfold. One of the most valuable gifts you can give any man is the gift of direction. Show him how to gather his forces and focus them the way he wants to go, and literally you do more for him than if you handed him $1 million. Andrew Carnegie gave away multiple millions for the purpose of founding free libraries, hoping thus to disseminate knowledge of all kinds and lift the entire knowledge level of a nation. Above and beyond this, he made available the science of personal achievement, in which I have played my own part. One of the greatest rewards of my life has been to see my book, Think and Grow Rich, given away as a means of spreading the philosophy. Mr. Choate is one of those who have given away hundreds of copies. Often he gives the book to men who, by no stretch of the imagination, ever will become prospects for life insurance. He gives the book to others because it helps him find himself. Undoubtedly, it has brought him business. Undoubtedly, it has helped many a man to be able to afford the life insurance he needs. Another student of mine moved to Oakland, California with a total capital of less than $200. He invested half his capital in Think and Grow Rich. He made a practice of lending the book to his neighbours, asking only that each person keep the book 1 week. At the end of that time, he would pick up the book and lend it to some other person. Later, he came to tell me what his habit of sharing his own philosophy had done for him. "When I started to lend those books of yours," he said, "I had no other purpose in mind than to make friends among my neighbours by introducing them to a philosophy which has so much friendship in it. Meanwhile, I had started my machine shop with one small drill press. Very soon, some of my neighbours who had read Think and Grow Rich began to spread the news of my shop and my philosophy of giving as much as I can, and business began to pour in. I never spent a cent in advertising. I never solicited a single order from anybody. At last report, this man had $100,000 worth of equipment in his shop and had grossed more than $1 million. He said, "It beats anything I ever heard of in my whole life. But you hear of it when your ear becomes attuned to the great art of giving. It is not a new idea. The great philosophers of all times have pointed out the riches we gain when we give away some of our wealth, of money, of time, of service, of unpremeditated moments of kindness, and especially of love. Giving to those who help themselves. Any man noted for his millions receives endless requests for money. He knows that most of these appeals come from people who will not use the money for necessities, let alone in any manner which helps them in their careers. He cannot hope to screen all such requests. Often it is far simpler for him to give large sums to a charity or to endow a foundation. Those who have worked for their money know that the virtue of money consists in its use, not in its quantity. This is equally true whether the amount be a dime or $1 million. Henry Ford once was approached by Miss Martha Berry of the Martha Berry School in Georgia. Miss Berry asked for an endowment for her school, but Mr. Ford refused the request. "Well," she countered, "will you give us a sack of peanuts?" Mr. Ford obliged by buying her a sack of raw peanuts. With the aid of her students, mountain boys and girls, Miss Berry planted and replanted the peanuts, selling the crop until she had converted the original sack into $600 in cash. She then returned to Mr. Ford and handed him the $600, saying, "You see how practical we are in the use of money?" Mr. Ford handed back the $600 along with some $2 million to build the fine stone buildings which now adorn the campus of the Martha Berry School in Mount Berry, Georgia. Mr. Ford made very few gifts of this kind. Experience had taught him that all too often gifts to schools are handled by impractical people who know very little about sound business or farming methods. As long as Martha Berry lived, the Ford private car appeared on the railroad siding near her school once a year, while Mr. and Mrs. Ford paid a visit. A present-day multimillionaire Henry Crown, who arrived in this country as a poor immigrant from Lithuania, is now a leading figure in the vast General Dynamics Corporation. Mr. Crown has put a great deal of money into a plan which teaches aspiring young people how to handle capital. He has set up a fund of $8,000 at a good many colleges, and this money is invested each year by the senior economics class. When the class makes a profit, its members share the surplus and the fund is passed on intact to the next class. Wealth creates wealth. A large sum of money in the hands of one man generally does not create as much wealth as does money which circulates, provided that those who handle the circulation are interested in creating wealth. A man's happiness and peace of mind depends on his sharing all kinds of wealth. Business relations cannot properly be described as a relationship of love between buyer and seller. Yet when the idea of service to one's fellow men comes into the relationship, much that is profitable to both parties also enters in. "A little bit of myself," said Henry Ford, "goes into every automobile that rolls off our assembly lines. And I think of every automobile we sell, not in terms of the profit it yields us, but in terms of the useful service it may render the purchaser." Thomas A. Edison said, "I never perfected an invention that I did not think about in terms of the service it might give others." The idea that a business should give its customers more than a product for a price is not new. And the history proves it creates both good businesses and good customers. Good relations between an industrial employer and his employees, however, are not very old as history goes. This is natural enough when we consider that enterprises which employ people by the thousands have not been with us for more than a few generations. They are a great way for the owner of the business to make money, and unfortunately many a labour force has been badly treated in the process. In past years, we had our own era of those industrial pirates who never thought of sharing with their employees the wealth their employees helped to create. While they made a great show of their money in New York, Newport, or Palm Beach, those men would have sneered at the idea that a society needs a large number of well-paid people who are able to buy more goods and lead better lives. Millionaires are far more numerous today. More than 5,000 new millionaires have so declared themselves on their tax returns in the last decade. Also, as I've mentioned, today's millionaires do not seem to want to notice that rich men used to require. Most of my readers will not recognise the names of some of the present-day millionaires and multimillionaires I've cited. Nor do today's moneyed men seem anxious to form a definite class to which the poor may not aspire. I quote Arthur Desio, who made so much money in building and selling mobile homes. It's easier to get ahead than it was 15 or 40 years ago. Look at the population growth and the tremendous rise in personal income. The country is just loaded with opportunities. So it is, and many of the opportunities would not exist if wealth were not better distributed than it used to be. Employers have seen the value to themselves, to their people, and to society of taking workers into partnership with industry. A capitalist society proves over and over that it is the best way to create maximum widespread wealth. A victory for the science of personal achievement. The R.G. Latournay Company is a large employer. Some years ago, I received a phone call from a former student who had become one of its executives. "Please come to see us immediately," he said. "We have a difficulty which only you can handle." When I arrived at the Latournay plant, I learnt that communistic influences had entered in the guise of a labour union. The company wanted help in immunising its employees against this ism, knowing that if the crisis could be surmounted, the men would realise which way of life was best for them. They asked me for a fee. "Perhaps there will be no fee," I replied. "Give me freedom to act, and if I cannot overcome your trouble, there will be no charge. If I succeed in eliminating the communist influences, I will tell you later what my charge will be." The deal was closed on that basis. I set up a cot in the plant and I stayed on duty day and night. The basic trouble was twofold. The men did not realise first how the company returned to them part of the wealth they created, and also few individuals had any idea of their own power to take their own abilities and multiply them through the exercise of a positive mental attitude. Fear of poverty and other crippling fears ran rampant among them. Belief in wealth and happiness and in each man's power to win his own wealth and create his own happiness has been pushed aside by negative thinking. Given this ground in which to sow their seeds of discord, the communist-minded organisers were able to make those men believe that their future should be in the hands of others, that they should reduce themselves to cogs in a kind of economic machine, that indeed it was wrong for a man of faith and ambition to rise where negative-minded men might not follow. In combating the communists, I never mentioned them. Rather, I taught the science of personal achievement, and that was all I needed to teach. In a short time, the Latournay employees saw how much greatness each man had within his own mind, a greatness nobody else can or should handle for him. They saw what it really means to work and the rewards work brings to a man who has some goals besides 3 meals a day and really wants to achieve his ambition. They came to see that the rich men of their time owned no natural power which they themselves did not own, and all they had to do was to find their powers for prosperity and use them. I succeeded. When I named my compensation, I received it immediately. 8 months later, the company increased my fee. Thus it goes, when men realise that wealth is not something you grab from another, it is something you build for yourself out of service to others, sparked and enhanced by your own positive, joyful inward drive. This is true wealth and part of peace of mind. I do not know how many of those Latournay men became rich, but I know they had reason to bear in mind the true picture of wealth and share it with others. Sharing the wealth in your own home. You can tell a great deal about a man by what goes on in his home. Men who are successful in living, not merely in mastering the mechanics of some trade, generally maintain homes in which no one person has to be boss and there is true love and true sharing. I have been in the homes of rich men whose wives had to beg them for money enough to buy needed articles of clothing. I have been in the homes of poor men in which every purchase had to be discussed, lest it leaves no money for food. and the poor home was the happier because of its atmosphere of sharing, even though the lack of money was sadly felt. I have at times been asked to give marriage counselling, and at times I've recommended that a marriage be broken. There are many reasons for such a recommendation, and I assure you the reasons are not trifling. I have noticed in some cases that the lack of the ability to share invariably shows itself. Let non-sharing take hold at any level, in any aspect of married life, and it leads to other troubles. You are going to make money, and when you do, make sure that your wife has a fund of her own to spend as she wishes. It will not be her fund in the sense that it is sacrosanct, for if you meet financial misfortune, she'll share this as well in a good and loving marriage. It will be her money in the sense that it is your recognition of your wife as a person, in her own right, your partner, and not your servant. I am informed that much of the chatter that goes on in beauty parlours has to do with the clever ways in which women get money out of their husbands. Not a few must resort to slipping a few dollars out of his pocket while he sleeps. Others invent charities or dream up school expenses for the children. Apparently, many a woman is literally forced into such tactics if she is to maintain a decent home, for her husband shows no willingness to shell out more than enough for a mere subsistence, if that. On the other hand, many a woman in the sanctity of hair-drying row reveals she has lost her grocery allowance in playing mahjong or in some similar pursuit, and she cannot admit this to her husband. The sum lost is rarely large, and mahjong is not wicked. It is the lack of frankness with a husband that is the truly damaging condition. If you knew how angry my husband can get, such a woman often says, you'd know why I can't tell him. So it takes two to create the bad situation. Add to this the fact that many husbands never tell their wives how much they earn or how much they may spend on drinks or how much they lose at poker. By and large, when a man shows he is willing to share, a woman by her nature is eager to share lovingly with him. High on the list of information a man should share with his wife is the knowledge of how much money he makes and how he acquires his money. Women generally stay at home or close to home while a man is out somewhere earning money. When a man comes home from his job, a woman likes him to bring with him some of the outside world. It is a smart man who sees to it that his wife gets a blow-by-blow description of all he does and where he spends his time without her having to ask for this information. There are sexual overtones in this, for a wife may work up jealousy for no reason, especially if a man has a job which does not keep him constantly at a desk or a bench within sight of others. Share and you have a marriage. Avoid sharing and you might as well be living alone. Think back upon the 9 basic motives we discussed in a previous chapter. To refresh your memory, they are 7 positive motives: the emotion of love, the emotion of sex, the desire for material gain, the desire for self-preservation, the desire for freedom of body and mind, the desire for self-expression, and the desire for perpetuation of life after death. And the 2 negative motives are the emotion of anger and revenge and the emotion of fear. It has been said that the first 3 basic motives, love, sex, and money, practically rule the world. I would not say this statement is entirely true, but there is a great deal of truth in it. A man who has not truly shared all of his life with a woman of his choice cannot know the magic of sex and love in their most sublime combination. But when a man lives with these motives, he often connects them like a mighty dynamo to the third. He makes more and more money so that he may share more and more of life's abundance with his wife. No part of your existence can be lived separately from all the other parts. When you are successful in one area, it helps you to be successful in all other areas. Most especially, when you have peace of mind at home, you can count on having peace of mind everywhere. I'll tell a little story about, or perhaps on, myself. There was a time in my life when changing a flat tire upset me completely. Now, if a flat tire occurs on one of my long drives across the wide open parts of the country, I change the tire and am not in the least bit upset. In former years, I had more muscle, but in former years, I did not drive with a woman of my choice beside me as I do today. Everyone has something to share and gains by sharing it. When a stranger stops you in the street and asks directions, you share your knowledge when you tell him. You do not have to be rich in money in order to do this. If you are really rich in human kindness, you'll give the stranger a very careful explanation and perhaps walk to the next corner with him and point out the way. The poorest of us has much to share. In some ways, a poor man has as much to share as does a rich man. Certainly it is so with love and with kindness. I shall suggest 3 general ways of sharing which are available to almost anybody. You may not make use of the particular instances used as examples, but the list will serve to open your mind to the many possibilities of sharing more than money. Share your special skills and knowledge. Many of us possess some special skill or knowledge which helps us to earn money. We are used to selling our skill. Now look for a way to give that skill without thought of a gain. A much-needed clubhouse for boys was built in the slum section of a large city. The basic construction costs were provided by a large foundation, but the clubhouse never would have gotten started were it not for those who gave their skills. A lawyer volunteered his services in drawing up the incorporation papers and other necessary documents. A carpenter installed locker room partitions. A painter gave his own services and also supervised a volunteer crew which painted the entire interior in cheery colours. And a mason installed a concrete ramp at one entrance so that physically handicapped boys could make their way in. Share by filling a gap where you see one. Mr. A loaned his lawnmower to his new neighbour, Mr. B, who had not had time to equip himself. This was the beginning of excellent good neighbour relations between the two families. But for a while, it seemed as though matters were going the other way. After Mr. B had trimmed his lawn, he returned the lawnmower with a big chip in one blade. Noticing this, Mr. A remarked diplomatically that Mr. B must have had some rocks hidden in his grass which chipped the blade. The new neighbour said gruffly that the blade had been chipped when he had been offered the use of the lawnmower and walked away. Since the chip was fresh and shiny, this hardly could have been so. Mr. A said nothing more. However, he limited his contacts with his new neighbour to mere nods if he met him in the street. One day, Mr. B came around with a brand new lawnmower and handed it to Mr. A. "I want you to have this," Mr. B said. "You see, I knew I'd broken that blade, but I couldn't afford to have it fixed right then. I guess I should have said so, but well, I didn't. Now things have turned out all right, and I want to do more than merely have the blade fixed." Thus is many a non-money debt returned with interest. Far more valuable than the lawnmower itself, however, was the atmosphere of cordiality which the two families found from then on. Share recognition and appreciation. Notice how often you are recognised as being in a certain role, for example, the role of a customer, and so you're treated in a certain way. Now turn around the situation and recognise the other person. You'll find it is a limitless form of sharing. For example, you may stop your car at a filling station on a hot day. The attendant rushes up, mopped his brow, anxious to give you prompt service. You recognise him as a person who has his own problems, and you say, "Take it easy, it's too hot to hurry." He'll remember you the next time you drive in. Say you are an employer or a foreman. One of your men does exceptionally good work. Many an employer or a foreman would observe that the man is paid to do a good job. So what? A wiser supervisor will make a point of telling a worker that his good performance has been noticed. When a person does a good job, he is favourably disposed towards anyone who gives him recognition. Furthermore, he'll try thereafter to keep his work up to a high standard. You will often offer many a kindness, you'll perform many a free service, and in many cases you'll see no return. Bear in mind there is always a return within yourself, for when you give of yourself, you make yourself bigger. And remember the law of compensation, which always works in your favour when you arrange it so. We shall look more deeply into the wonders of compensation later on. Look for ways to share your wealth. Never ask what wealth. In sharing, you'll find you're wealthier than you think. Share more than money, and when you have plenty of money, you'll be more closely attuned to human needs, and your money will give added benefit to those who share it. The supreme secret is like a half-hidden treasure you may pass 100 times a day without noticing, yet you see it from the corner of your eyes. Okay, so that's the chapter, The Art of Sharing Your Riches, and I am sure you found it very interesting in terms of the power of giving. I have actually also done a podcast episode, if you check out Superconscious Success Podcast, on the power of giving. And I think that it's really important that we learn to share, whether it's money, whether it's our time, whether it's our energy, whatever it is, we share as much as we can because it always comes back to us. So as I've said before, if you're wanting to get the summary notes from this particular chapter, head across to superconsciousSuccess.com, sign up for our free inner circle, and all of the notes will be in there. Okay, thanks so much for joining me today, and I look forward to reading the next chapter to you. Okay, bye.